Hello and welcome to Filter Optional. Sorry, I had a little something in my throat
A little scratchy throat.
It was weird. Just right
there. I heard you getting onto Zoom yesterday and you said hello. And then you were like, oh, sorry. I was on my podcast.
Yes. I was on a Zoom, but I am Chico West and I am the no filter. Yes,
and I'm Shannon West. I'm the filter.
And this is our little platform, West Media Productions.
Yes, our little podcast that could.
And so I did a Zoom, family counseling session, and it said filter optional. And I go, oh, hello, I'm not on my podcast.
No, you're not.
And so I did a Zoom. It was good.
You associate the word hello with your intro now.
Yes.
Which is not what I wanted to happen, but
well, we got to come up with something else. I don't know
intro.
I'm all right with you taking the lead.
Oh, you're not?
Yes, I am. I can step back.
Oh, you can, huh?
Yes. You know, and so I was thinking about Happy Mother's Day late, but we celebrated Mother's Day.
Yes.
How was your Mother's Day?
You know, it was good. I have to say that this year in particular, I don't know what, well, I know what it was. There were several things that had me thinking of mothers that had lost children, thinking of mothers that, couldn't be with their children, or people that wanted to be mothers that weren't mothers, that aren't mothers. It had me real self-aware, kind of in my feels about that for other people. It's a tough day for some people.
Yeah, and so it was interesting. I enjoyed it, letting you kind of do your deal. You went and slept in and then went to your little sauna deal. And then you went over and spent a little time with just your mom.
Yes, because, it's been a long year, obviously. And my mom is fully vaccinated now. And they're just starting to get back out. And so, yeah, what hit me was that, so Travis had to stay in Austin for Mother's Day. He has exams and he has had a loss that he has to manage right now too, which made me sad that I couldn't comfort him in his loss, but of a teammate. But so it really had me thinking about how, as a mom, you really want to touch, your children. You want to hug them and you want to comfort them.
And you want to celebrate.
And it wasn't about me. It wasn't about him hugging me because it's Mother's Day. It was because of all that he had going on, and I didn't get to see him. And then it had me thinking, my mom probably wants to see me and touch me and hug me. And I don't want to get emotional because it's been an emotional time. Gosh, wow. This is coming out of nowhere. Well, not nowhere. But anyway, so I wanted to go see my mom, and so I did, and it was a great visit. She, too, was down about the same circumstances, and so it was a good Mother's Day. I'm grateful and thankful for what I have, but I was grieving for those that have suffered losses or have never been a mom that wanted to be a mom or whatever. I mean, there's something to be said about that pain for people. So,
yeah, I was. I thank you, Shannon, for being vulnerable right now. It's tough.
We don't have time for me to be so vulnerable.
Yeah, this is. I think back about our podcast. It was a year ago. You went to on-site. You turned 50. I just seen so much growth. The fact that you're vulnerable right now on our podcast, that is not you, and that's all right. And so I'm grateful for that. It's like this grieving. I got my buddy, John Lieberman, is with his dad right now. He's dying, and I was on a Zoom with him and all my other buddies this morning, and you know, there's, you know, you're talking about motherhood and stuff like that. I remember when both our boys were born and just being in there and watching them come to life. And then there's this other part is, you know, we you know, our hearts ache, and I love your passion and compassion, you know, for the Ellinger family as Jake passed away last week, you know, and that's, you know, Travis's, you know, teammate and buddy, and he's going to go to the funeral tomorrow. And it's just, it's tough to see that, and someone dying so young, not like John's dad, who's, you know, an old man that's lived a long life. And so
it's tough.
It's wild. And so
And Beck was very sweet to me, except I sent a little TikTok video in our family chat that was about moms, and Beck was like, "You can thank me for that," or something. I mean, and then he was like, "Tomorrow's all about you." Like, he wasn't gonna let me have it a day early, you know. And then he gave me a nice card, and gave me a hug and everything. So that was good. He was a good boy, but you know, it wasn't necessarily about me. Anyway.
No, it was all right, and I was grateful that I could just be present, you know, in your grieving and stuff like that. And we
my expectations for you and holidays are pretty low. We're gonna talk a little bit about marriage today, I think, and you've already set the bar kind of. I mean, I don't mean to say that in a ragging on you way. It's just not really your gift to. For celebrations, it's not really mine either. But
no, not at all. You know,
I mean, you're going out of town for my birthday, so I mean that just.
Yes, I am. I am going out of town. You know, and there's a part of me I'm wrestling with that. Going out of town.
Don't, because I already have, you know, stuff going on. So just
wait. Here's the crazy thing, Shannon. It's not even wrestling with you. It's just wrestling. I'm just wrestling. You know. And so that's the wild thing. But today, man, I wanted to talk about marriage.
Yes.
You know, and man, there's a lot of books written about marriage. You know, I deal with a lot of marital counseling and stuff like that. Marriage is wild. It's a wild, wild
that
ride.
Is profound.
Yes. Very
people turn it up. Turn off any distractions.
Yes.
Marriage is wild.
But I don't know. When you think about it, if you were to ask people, I haven't, but if you were to ask people, is like, man, you know, how do you think people would define marriage?
Well, I don't know.
How would you define it? What do you think of when you think of marriage? All of a sudden, Kevin, I can see Kevin right now. He's thinking.
Wheels are turning. I'm trying to think.
Yes. Yeah. How would you define it?
Committing your life to another, to create a new life as one unit.
Committing your life to.
Well, that's actually better than that.
We didn't
that
talk I about this. I mean, you know, our podcasts aren't exactly scripted. So no, I didn't know you were going to ask me the definition of marriage. I mean, I had other notes and other thoughts, but what are you getting at?
What I truly, this thought just came to me as we started this podcast. You know, I mean, sometimes
so how
those
do you
are
define
the.
Marriage, then?
So some of those. Things are
since
are
I
the
said
best.
Committing your life to another to create one unit, new life, whatever. What's your definition?
Yeah, my definition is, man, it's this this place, and I'm going to use kind of a biblical word. It's a place of sanctification, you know. And if I was to, you know, break that down into layman's terms, is like, man, I get to learn a lot about me being married. Just like I think you get to learn a lot about you being married. It's like how I like to put it, it's getting a giant mirror put up in your face. You know, it's a place to actually grow and get to this place of getting out of self. And it's like this constant battle of addressing my selfishness.
Okay. And so a week ago, would you have defined it that way?
Yes.
Huh.
That's what I say in my office. I go, marriage is getting a giant mirror put in your face. So you're correct. I would define it that way.
You're correct.
The Merriam-Webster's is a very cold definition.
So yeah, what does it say?
The legally or formally recognized union of two people as partners in a personal relationship.
Yeah.
And then it has the other context of it, which is a combination or mixture of two or more elements. I almost like that better. Like that almost applies to my marriage relationship.
Yes.
But I liked the commitment aspect of your definition, Janet.
Yeah. Yeah. See. Yes.
I like I love your
definition. I agree that it, you know, and in fact, so I agree with your definition too, Chico, because I wanted to talk about in another podcast about self-awareness because I've had a lot of talks about that lately with my friends. I don't know if that's our age or stage because we will have been married 26 years in August. And so we're kind of, say, halfway through our marriage. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, the first half was, you know, a lot of different kind of work than I think the second half is going to be. It's all work, but it's going to be different. And I think you could say that about your stages of life, like turning 50, the next 50 years, hopefully, maybe I have, will be, the work will be different. And I want to talk about work and self-awareness in another podcast, but let's talk about marriage. It's so in the first half of our marriage, I feel like so that we can talk to newlyweds and then young parents and everything else too, is that a lot of work goes into things outside of yourself. Okay. Like I was trying to work on getting to know you better under the same roof and in a marital relationship. And it fed my codependency because I was naturally bent that way. And then once we had kids, it was like all my energy was poured into the kids and making sure that they were okay and all that kind of stuff. And so the center of my life was not our marriage per se. Does that make sense?
I'm listening.
Okay, yeah. So I just thought you'd interject. So that's why you hear a lot about the 7-year itch or whatever, because that's generally you've been married, you maybe have added some kids, you know, you kind of like, and then it's like, what is my purpose? Because you haven't been self-aware for so long and you haven't had that mirror up to your, like you said, the definition is putting a big mirror up to yourself and addressing, we need to talk more about how that works because I didn't feel like I had a mirror in front of me. I felt like I was looking around the mirror for, you know, 25 years. And then now the kids are grown. They don't want me concentrating on them so hard. You don't want me concentrating on you so hard. You say all the time, just let me be me. And I have finally gotten to a place to where I let you be you because I can't control you, clearly. And I can't control the kids. So, but now I'm kind of having to look in the mirror. And so that's kind of the midlife crisis part of it, I think, is when you all of a sudden you have to become more self-aware in your marriage. Does that make sense? You want to?
Yeah, I think so. It's like, wait, and the reason I wanted to talk about this is like, man, I go in spurts on listening to Tim Keller and, you know, different sermons. And I was listening to one on marriage. And I like what he said is like, you know, marriage truly is about love. But there's times in your marriage you're not going to like that person, but hopefully you still love them. You know, and I different aspects of, each other's personalities and stuff like that. But I have always felt, I know there's times in our marriage that you haven't liked, you know, some of my personality or what I've done, but I've always felt that you've loved me, you know, and so I truly appreciate that. But the crazy thing is with marriage is getting that up there is like you at times have really done a great job of holding the mirror up You know, at other times, I don't know if you've done a really good job at it. It's been more attacking. But most of the time, you've done a good job of holding the mirror up and let me see my selfishness, self-centeredness. You know, and I'm able to recognize that and get out. And there is that place of, man, I appreciate that, man, that you and I have unpacked and done some of our own work to come back there. Is like, I don't see either one of us. We have good friends, but we don't put our friends above our marriage. We have relationship with our parents, but we do not put our relationship with our parents above our marriage.
Right.
I don't think we put our relationship with our kids above our marriage. And right. So I see a lot of people, you know, in marriage counseling, you know, what do people fight about? You know, what is the big conflict? Money, you know, family, and sex.
Yeah.
You know, but I think a lot of people just kind of go through marriage. They have these good friends and they don't really bond with their spouse. Does that make sense?
Yes, because I think it's hard. I think we're always looking around the mirror, you know? And so it's like, if my kids are doing well, then I'm clearly doing something right.
Yes.
So, you know, you shouldn't talk to me about anything that I'm doing wrong, because clearly if my kids are doing well, I'm doing something right. If my, you don't really have that parent, you know, relationship the same anymore. But, you know, if my friends like me and I'm having a good time with my friends and I'm invited to every party and whatever else, then, you know, clearly you're looking around the mirror and you're not really concentrating on what's at home. And I listened to the same sermon that you did from Tim Keller on marriage, and I thought it was really good. And he said in his sermon, I want to give him credit, that marriage should be the center of your life, which was interesting to me coming from a pastor, because he's relating it into the biblical model. Like, you know, Jesus is supposed to be the center of our life, but that's supposed to be the center of your marriage, and therefore your marriage is the center of your life because Jesus is the center of your marriage. So I just kind of want to clear that up for those that believe that. But the point is, the marriage should be the center of your life. And if everything around you is weak, okay? So he was saying, but your marriage is strong.
You're going to be all right.
Well, he said, I wrote it down because I wanted to quote him because he said it's so great and I want to give him the credit. But he said, if everything around you is weak, but your marriage is strong, you move out into the world strong, okay? So let me repeat that. So if everything around you is weak, meaning your friendships, your fractured relationship with
your
parents,
your business,
your kids, if all those things are weak, but your marriage is strong, you move out into the world strong.
Vibrant.
All those things can be weak, but you know that you have a solid foundation at home and with a partner that you have agreed to match up with and in the biblical sense become one, and you can count on that. If it's strong, you can count on that and help move you through weakened friendships or weakened parent relationships with kids. You know, a lot of, you know, they say, what are the biggest marriage destroyers? Also, a loss of a child,
kids struggling with addiction. I see that a lot.
Correct. Yeah. Or, you know, not having friend groups or things like that that make you lonely, and you seek love outside of your marriage or whatever, if you want friendships or whatever. But, you know, you can't go out into the world strong. You're weak and you end up falling to temptation for seeking love. Okay. And then he also said, if everything around you is strong,
and your marriage
but
is
your marriage
weak.
Is weak, you move out into the world in weakness and weak
and fractured.
And
he
fractured.
He said fractured. And so I like that, because I think about, okay, hey, a little over 3 months ago, you know, we went through the, you know, selling Casa and stuff, but we were united. Those
right.
things outside were fractured, and yes, there was some pain, there was some loss and stuff like that, but you and I being united really helped me have this peace. I still, you know, right now, Chico 3.0 is doing some of these podcasts and, you know, I have this counseling practice. And yet I know that God has a plan for you and I. And I don't, I'm not sure what is next with that plan, but man, I feel united with you. You know, we don't always, you know, get along, but I like what Keller also talked about in that sermon is, you know, when you have that healthy marriage, it's like you can receive criticism and you can give criticism and forgiveness. You know, it doesn't fracture you. You know, when, you know, that I can receive that healthy criticism from you, I can give that criticism, and we, you know, try to sit on that forgiveness.
Well, that's where that self-awareness comes in. Like if you, you know, if you are weak in your marriage, you're not going to receive that criticism well at all. In fact, if everything else is strong, you're not going to, and your marriage is weak, you're going to go out into the world with weakness, and then you're going to receive everything you can from, because you're weak, you're going to be like looking for friendships to fill your tank. You're going to be looking for your kids to fill your tank.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is like you and I can't do that, you know, because if it would be easy to get, you know, for either one of us in different areas to get Travis or Beck to fill our tank.
Oh yeah.
You know, it would be easy to get in there. I love, like we started this episode, I love that you went and spent some time with your mom and your dad was there too. But the cool thing is you've done your work. You haven't brought your baggage in a lot of ways, into our marriage. You know, lots of times people bring in trying to appease mom or dad, you know, and it's like, I've unpacked my stuff. I love what Keller was talking about in Ephesians 5, to a husband shall leave and cleave to his wife, you know, is get away and have that new, you know, relationship.
Yeah. I mean, he was saying, I loved how he put it as far as like, that doesn't mean like leave your parents. Like, you know what I mean?
Like write them off. Right, no, he's right. Not saying that, but their stuff and how they dealt with their marriage and how they raised and stuff like that, that's not a part of who we are.
Right.
You know, we have to set tone for our marriage and stuff like that. It's also not, you know, seeking that approval or stuff like that. It's like, wow, we get to separate.
The example he used that I think anybody could use and I could use was that, you know, his mom didn't work outside of the house, and so she took care of all the things under the roof in the house, and then told Tim when he was little, you know, your dad works and whatever, so I take care of all this for him. This is what I do.
And changing diapers and stuff like that.
Yeah, I do that. And so he took that into his own marriage because that's what his mom told him. That's what he had heard all his life. And so his whole point was that the leaving and cleaving is supposed to be that you create your own new way of doing things.
And then it's wise.
And you have to communicate to do that, though. You have to communicate. You have to say, hey, I'm not doing this for you, because I did go into our marriage doing everything that my mom did. I mean, because that was the model. It was a good model for you.
Exactly. But here's the deal is I love what he said is because his, you know, his wife, you know, her dad was changing diapers, was doing all those things. That's how she saw that. And he goes, man, then all of a sudden we have a child and it has this dirty diaper. And I look at my wife and she goes, this is what her family said, finders keepers, losers weepers, that it was his now responsibility. He had never seen that. He even talked about, he doesn't even think his dad, you know, knew what a diaper was, but he never changed those things. That same thing happened, you know, on my side of the family. My granddad's first diaper he ever changed out of six boys was mine.
Which is... he was the granddad, so it was his first grandchild. He had six boys, but then his first grandchild was the first diaper he changed.
Yes, and that same thing happened with, you know, with him. It was just passed on. And so you can get into these patterns, and it's like, all of a sudden it's like, all of a sudden, who you bring baggage into marriage, you have to unpack that. You know, it's not saying good, bad, right, or wrong. It's naming it.
But it's hard to even know what the baggage is when it's so imprinted. You know, we're programmed.
Oh, for sure. And so that's why we talked. I like that, you know, we're going to do an episode on self-awareness. It's like, do that. But it's like, that's doing the work. It's like, the cool thing is, my son, Travis, goes through this tragedy last week. He calls me on Saturday. Saturday was May 8th. It was 42 years since my dad passed away.
Yeah.
He was a kid. You know,
and your dad was a kid.
My dad was a kid. Oh. You know, Travis is 21.
Well, your dad was 30.
31.
31.
My Travis calls me and goes, "Hey Dad, how are you doing?" I go, "Oh, I'm doing good." And he goes, "I talked to Bill. I know today's, you know, the anniversary of your dad's death. How are you doing with that?" And it's like, I love that he became self-aware and goes, "Man, I'm going to reach out to my dad."
Right.
And I go, "Son, you're actually a lot closer to his age when he died than I am."
Right. Right.
I go, that is crazy. I go, I've done the work, and I'll still go through the grieving. And we had this cool conversation. But he was able to ask questions, and I talked about doing the work. And that's why in marriage, a lot of times we don't do the work. And where I want to get to is, it's like we don't do the work because we can get distracted with all the kids stuff. Now our kids are basically, you know, grown. We don't have a lot of interaction. You talk about early in marriage, there was a lot of activities. You know, weekends were spent doing, you know, going to lacrosse or baseball or basketball or football or flag football or this or that, tackle football and then flag football, you know, with the two boys.
Right.
You know, and so we were running around. Everything was busy at night and stuff like that. And then you get real busy. Then all of a sudden you have your friends. And I see a lot of marriages, it's like they're getting fulfilled. Like what you were saying with Keller is like, if your marriage ain't healthy, but you're trying to get fulfilled through your job, through your career, through your friends, through your family.
It's also, I don't think my personality, your personality is different, but my personality does not know how to ask for what I need. I mean, that's the Enneagram too, you know, again, we bring that up, we'll probably bring it up every time, but.
Yeah, you don't know how to, you know how to meet other people's needs, but not your own.
I know, but here's my point. Is that so? First 25 years of marriage, I know how to meet your needs, and I know how to meet our kids' needs and whatever, because that is how I get my worth, or my, you know, relationships are so important, and I know how to meet my friends' needs and all that kind of stuff. And then when you hit a point where you're sick and tired because haven't had your needs met because I haven't expressed them, then you start to resent those people that aren't meeting your needs. And you start to resent the people closest to you.
Hello.
Like the one that's living under your roof. You even start to resent your kids a little bit, you know, if they're not cleaning up or whatever, because you've always done it for them or whatever, you know. But you're especially going to resent your spouse. So then you go out seeking to get your needs met. Who's going to meet your needs? Your friends. You're going to get in a circle of hens. If you're a woman, and you know, you can start saying, "I just can't believe it. I have to do this. I have to do that. I have to do this. I have to do that." And they're like, "Oh, tell me about it. I have to do this too." You know what? You don't feel alone. You start to express your needs, but to the wrong people.
Yes.
Because they're not going to meet your needs. They're just going to help you
fuel them.
Fuel them. Get more resentful, and then you know, or you're going to go to a counselor who's going to say, "Well, you're correct. He is not meeting your needs," you know, or your spouse or your partner, whoever it is not meeting your needs. You're going to get validation for that.
Yes.
But that's still not going to help them to meet your needs.
And especially if they don't know what your needs are and if you're not
right.
communicating.
And if you
know what I say a lot of times, Shannon?
What?
When I'm doing couples counseling, yes. I take my ring off.
Yes.
And I hold it up, and I go, "You have one of these?" And they mm-hmm. have one. I go, "This isn't a mind-reading device."
Right. We all know that you cannot read minds, that's for sure. But,
and so,
But, you know, it's just so for a personality like me, it could be a man or a woman. I'm not going to say for women, just because I am a woman, I can, that's what I can speak to. But I have had, that's the work I've had to do. That's the unpacking I've had to do, is figure out what my needs are. Sometimes that can be journaling, meditation, prayer, that God will reveal what your needs are. But, and then you have to practice. You have to practice expressing your needs, especially, but when you've built that kind of resentment up against a spouse, it's really hard. Pride is an issue with everyone, I think. Stubbornness and pride can be an issue with everybody. Not everybody is just perfectly humble and like, you know, exactly. I mean, so if I have built up...
pride's one of the seven deadly sins.
Right. But if I've built up all this resentment towards you in my head because you're not meeting my needs, I'm certainly not going to be able to go to you and be like, I really need you to do this for me, because I'm going to be afraid of rejection.
And prideful.
Pride and prideful, whatever. I'm going to be afraid of rejection. I'm going to be afraid of a fight. I'm going to be afraid that you are ultimately not going to meet my needs because you're incapable of doing that, because I think you're incapable of doing that. So then I'm just going to be like, okay, well, I'll go continue to get my tank filled
by your friends,
other sources, and I will go out into the world in weakness.
Not in strength.
Because I'm weak, because my needs aren't being met, not in strength. So that's just what I want to encourage people to, they have to know how to.
But, and so I love I love that you're saying that, because I love that you brought up resentment. Because, I mean, I love, resentment is our number one offender, according to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. You know, so if it's the number one offender, it's like, how do I unpack my resentments? I like what the Big Book talks about is, you know, I put pen to paper and I write down what their resentments are, you know, towards that person, and then how it affects me. And then the last part is, what part am I playing in that? You know, it's if I don't put what part I'm playing, if I have a resentment towards you and I can build this case, but then I go, wait a minute, what part am I playing in that? I might not be sharing it with you. You might not know that I have this resentment. You might not even be aware of it. I'm playing a huge part in that.
Right.
By not showing up honestly.
And you certainly won't know what needs are.
Oh, at all.
Because they're not being expressed. So I just would encourage people to put the mirror up, figure out what their needs are. And even if you have poured 25 years into, you know, your partner and your kids and your parents and friends and everyone else, even if you've just, that's a lot of good comes from that. It's not bad.
It's not bad at all. But here's the deal.
You have to become self-aware enough to take care of yourself.
But before you can even do that, it's like you have to put, I mean, you have to recognize, okay, what are my resentments?
Well, right.
You know, because it's good.
What are my needs, maybe? Because you may not recognize resentment.
Before
you recognize.
I don't know if you can ask for your needs if you have resentments.
Well, I think
Does that make sense?
Well, I think you can. I think both can lead to the same place. Like, you can recognize your need. Like, I need you to, you know, wash my car or whatever once a month. I need you to do that. And then you can get to, because I am so resentful that you don't do that already. Or
I don't think it works that way. I mean, that's where I would probably disagree with you. Because it's like, no, I'm not going to meet that need. You know, because if we unpack that, because I don't want to.
But if I ask for it.
You can ask for it, but it's like, okay, yes, I can do a checklist. And it becomes a checklist instead of really what's at the heart is you don't feel valued and loved. And that's the resentment, you know, and that you don't believe I appreciate that. No, because you're making it more just about the car wash. So I disagree with you.
Well, no, I could tell you, I resent the fact that you don't do this.
how come? And so what is the reason behind that resentment? And so you unpack that resentment, then we can address the need. So I think you're putting the cart before the horse if you talk about your need before your resentment. Because, man, your resentment will still be there, you know, and it's like it'll scratch the itch and it'll cover it up a little bit.
Well, I mean, we're going to disagree a little bit just because I think identifying the need can help you get down to the resentment.
I think that's there's some truth to that, but then you have to unpack the resentment before
maybe
sharing the need.
Maybe. Yes, maybe, but you can't necessarily just identify the resentment without identifying the need.
Well,
because when people ask me my personality, what do you need? I have to really process that. I have to really think about what I need. And if you said, what do you resent?
You have to really process that as well.
It's the same thing. I know. It's the same thing, though.
And so that's where I'm saying it's all right to process it. I like the fact
that
you
didn't say it wasn't all right to process it.
I don't. But you really have to think about your need. I think you really have to think about your resentment. It's not it.
I think they're almost one and the same in a lot of ways. I just do. When it comes to marriage, we're talking about marriage, you know.
Yes, we are. Maybe. I mean,
it's tough for me to identify resentment specifically without identifying the need, like why I resent it. I don't know. I mean, maybe we're just talking about the same thing.
Here's the deal. My experience with resentment is, okay, what part am I playing in this? You know, because if you're talking about a need, then it's just me not meeting that need instead of seeing what part, if I actually hold the mirror up in my face, what part am I playing in this? And so,
well, I agree with that. And that's where I need to recognize how to ask for what I need. Like, I need to know what I need to process what I need so that then I can see my part in not communicating that or not.
And so that's where I was just kind of unpacking it. It's like, okay, washing your car once a month. That's really.
Well, it's a bad example, but I mean, and now you're going to get all, you get, sometimes you get all honed in on one little thing and you're like meep 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 meep.
I do, but I'm trying to unpack it in the sense of, man, my part is bigger than the actual resentment I have towards someone. Is where I'm going.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not following that one.
If I
understand what you're saying.
If
you're
I have a resentment towards you,
yes.
My part is bigger than whatever you did.
Correct.
Okay. And so if I can talk about my needs, you know, I need to have sex with you, you know, three times a week, you know.
Okay, Chico, we're running out of time, but this is not what I was saying. What I was saying is that if I can identify my need and why I need that, which is the resentment that you have no idea about, and how, if I can figure out how to communicate that to you, but I have to process it and figure out how to communicate that with you.
The need or the resentment?
Both.
Okay. And what I'm saying is you got to recognize the resentment first. Before
both,
you
instead
can...
of just saying, I get it. I get what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to go off on this rabbit trail because we're not connecting, communicating, because I was just using the car wash example as like, if I could communicate that to you, like, I really need you, somebody to take care of the cars, like the car stuff, like getting the oil changed and getting the whatever. I'd really like for you to do that. And over the years, I have built resentment because you don't take care of that. And I think that's kind of a man's job. That's just my feelings.
Well, I'm glad you're sharing this, and I don't mind communicating that. I need to have sex with you three times a week.
Okay,
you
know? We're not.
I mean, that
we don't have time.
I
for this.
I think that's kind of the same.
You built a resentment. Do you have a resentment?
No, because I'm looking at my part. I'm using that as an example because I think that's the wife's duty. You know, I could throw Chico it out West. That same way that you just said. I think that's the man's job.
Every husband has a little resentment about not having sex enough.
Yes.
It's a tale as old as time.
And so that's, you know, I'm just using that as your example.
Okay, I don't like where this is going.
Okay. And so I think that's all right to unpack that. You know, but those are the things. What I'm saying is
I didn't ask for your help unpacking it.
Okay.
See, this is how, we did an episode on marriage, and this is how we're ending, like, not communicating properly.
All right. Well, good. But until next time.
Good luck,
that's
everybody.
That's why we're going to leave it out. We'll come back and figure this shit out again.